If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Warning. This episode contains foul language, graphic descriptions of murder, and a surprising ethical dilemma.
You are listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, unusual, paranormal, supernatural, creepy, sticky, gross, scary, and everything in between. Each week, we sit down with one of our friends and chat about something weird. This week is part two of our Unsolved Mysteries episode. My name is Ashley, and as usual, I'm joined by my beautiful co-host, Lauren. And joining the two of us again this week is my best friend, Amy Hanselman, visiting from Denver, Colorado. Last week, we talked about the Dyatlov Pass incident, and boy, oh boy, was that a doozy, for two reasons. One, what a strange and unusual mystery. And two, how did we manage to fit in the documentary Happy Feet, Jurassic Park 2 The Lost World, and Christian Bale's famous rant? I can only chalk that up to raw talent. You're welcome. This week, Amy is going to be telling us about a murder in Missouri that has remained unsolved for almost 40 years, despite having dozens of witnesses. And we're going to try and figure out how a young girl got herself locked into a water tank on top of a hotel in Los Angeles. We've got some really, really great episodes coming up, and Joe is going to be joining me for bonus Patreon episodes, and some Halloween countdown newsletters are being sent out as we speak. So if you're interested in getting some extras, check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast and donate to our show. That's enough yapping. You've got some solving to do. Enjoy the show, and we'll see you soon.
Oh, it's me.
It is you. What did you bring for us today?
I brought you
a handwritten notebook.
Beautiful. I did not bring a computer with me on my trip.
That's okay.
There's something great about
it. I really wish I had, because I was like writing this late at night by hand, and I have the worst handwriting. All right. So I am doing the story of Ken Rex McElroy. Okay. I have not looked up how to pronounce his last name, but he's American.
Well, so if he's anything like the McElroy brothers.
Who are the McElroy?
What? My brother and me.
Oh.
Love them so much.
I do too. I love them a whole bunch. Go on.
Okay. Sorry. I listened to like one episode of that show, maybe two, and I was like, they're very sexist and I don't like them.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah, I know. And that's what everybody says. They're like, what? And I was like, maybe I listened to an early one because I've heard.
Maybe, because they're super like.
I've heard that when they started it, they were like, you know, 19, 22, and 24.
Yeah, they were fools.
And they were, yeah, they were just a bunch of stupid, dumb, white idiots.
Truth.
Okay, so I'm doing the story of Ken Rex McElroy. He was born in 1934.
Good year.
It was. He, it really wasn't.
It was
a really terrible, and yeah, he was like,
depression.
He was from like Missouri too. Oh, terrible dirt place to live in the 1930s.
Yeah, no. Sorry,
garbage.
Ken.
Probably like dust bowl shit happening. I mean, that's more like Oklahoma. Whatever. Doesn't matter. All right. So here's the thing about Ken. Early on, he was seen as trouble. He dropped out of school at the age of 15 or 13, depending on which article you want to go by. And he had a terrible reputation as a small-time thief, a womanizer, and a raccoon hunter.
Was that bad?
Apparently, like, they list it like it's a bad thing. I don't know.
All right.
Raccoon hunter. I don't enjoy raccoons. Well, they're kind of cute.
They're adorable.
Well, and especially like in the 1950s and 60s, my dad just told me this, raccoons had to be protected because Davy Crockett was such a big deal, and he had those coonskin caps. Everybody wanted a coonskin cap for their son.
So they almost became like an endangered species.
That would not be bad now because raccoons are everywhere.
They're everywhere out here in Los Angeles where we have no wildlife. We have a ton of raccoons.
Yeah, that's true. And they're very rude, but they are so cute.
They're so cute.
So
I don't care.
Stinking cute. I want to hold them in my arms, but they would never let me.
They would hate it.
Yeah, they'd scream and scratch.
So throughout his life, he was accused of dozens of felonies, including assault, child molestation, statutory rape, otherwise known as child molestation, arson, burglary, and weirdly last on the list, hog and cattle rustling, which I feel like when you make a list, you save like the worst for last.
Yeah.
And then they were like, he stole a pig
also
been the first.
Worst of
Can
all.
Can you believe?
He stole a cow.
Wait for it. Oh my gosh.
Hold your breath.
So he fathered 10 children
Good.
With 3 or 4 different women, depends on who you ask, including his third or fourth wife, Trina McLeod. He met Trina when she was 12 or 14 in about 1970.
Is this two different people we're talking about?
So here's the deal.
Well, the thing is, it's Missouri in 1930 something in the Great Depression. Like,
this was
records
in 1970.
Aren't... Oh, this is 1970.
This was 1970. So he was born in 34, and this is his. We'll call her his third wife.
Okay.
There's just so many different reports. I don't know. It was the 70s. Everybody was like trying acid. They didn't know how to write down proper articles. Yeah. So in about 1970, we'll say she was 14. She was 14 in 1970 when she met Ken. She became pregnant about 2 years later and dropped out of school and moved in with Ken and his second wife, Alice. Divorced Alice and married Trina, it's thought, to escape prosecution for statutory rape, which she accused him of. She accused him of rape and then married him so that she would not be able to testify against him because she was the only witness of the statutory rape. And that's kind of why it's confusing about how many wives he had, because he would like divorce women and then marry other women because he would marry really young women and he wanted them to not be able to be witnesses against him in court. So he had done this like a couple of times, and the legality of their marriage, like Alice, his second wife, she's like, I don't really know how long we were married because I don't know how legal it was.
Jeez.
Yeah,
because also he would be like living with second wife and third wife at the same time.
So he did that though, and they were friends.
Well,
so
sister wives.
This is some sister wife shit right here. So in about 1972, 2 weeks after her baby was born, Trina and Alice, her sister wife, left Ken and went to Trina's parents' house. Ken found them, brought them back home, then went to Trina's parents' house, shot their dog, and burned down their house.
Oh my God.
So Trina, when later asked, said that's nonsense, it was faulty wiring, but he definitely shot her dog.
Yeah, who else shot
her? Or her parents' dog.
That is so sad and upsetting.
So Trina like talked to the police about this. She was like 16 at the time. I feel very bad for Trina. She was in a very weird situation where she was clearly in an abusive situation. So was Alice. They both stand by this guy, you know, even until their deaths, whatever. Anyway. So because of these events in 1973, he was indicted for arson, assault, and statutory rape. Trina was placed in foster care with her child. Ken found out where she lived and would park outside her foster home. He threatened Trina's foster parents by telling them all about their biological daughter's bus route. And he said, I'll trade you girl for girl.
This
led to even more charges against Ken. And then, like, nothing happened about it. In 1976, a farmer named Romaine Henry said that Ken had shot him twice with a shotgun. Apparently, Ken had been shooting guns on Henry's property, and when Henry was like, can you not? Ken shot him twice with a shotgun in the stomach. Ken was charged with assault with intent to kill. And the court case dragged on. Ken parked outside of Henry's home at least 100 times. Yeah, he really liked parking outside of people's houses. It was
an intimidation tactic.
Wanted them to know he was there.
Be like, hey, I can come in if I want to.
And it worked. Oh, and I forgot to say, so the name of the town was Skidmore, Missouri, and he's known as the bully of Skidmore, Missouri. Because he was a bully.
Yeah.
Straight up bully.
So when the case finally went to trial, two raccoon hunters said that Ken had been with them on the day of the shooting. And Ken's defense attorney dragged up some petty crime that Henry had committed 30 years earlier that he had not disclosed to the court. And Ken was acquitted of shooting him twice because he had, I don't know, stolen a candy bar. I don't know what the guy did. They didn't go into it, but it was probably not whatever. Probably
nothing. Not attempted murder.
Yeah. Guys, he got away with it. I'm going to tell you this. He shot that guy twice, got away with it.
He's getting away with everything.
In 1980. One of Ken's children, who was 7, got into an argument with a local store clerk. Apparently, this 7-year-old tried to steal a piece of candy, and the clerk was like, oh, can you, like, give that back? Can you not?
Can you not?
Can you not, please? Ken heard about this and became enraged, like any shitty dad would. He started stalking the owner of the store, 70-year-old Ernest Bowenkamp, and his family. He would, like, go to their farm and park outside their farm because that's kind of his thing. I think it was his hobby. So he went to the store and threatened Bo with a shotgun in the back storage area and then shot him in the neck twice.
What?
Bo survived and Ken was arrested for attempted murder.
Ken is not a very good shot. Go on.
He's not. Well, shotguns are tough.
That's because
true. Remember when Dick Cheney shot that guy in the face with a shotgun? And he was in his 70s. And he's like, I think he's still around. And now he's like got to be at least 85.
That's true.
I mean, but honestly, if he died, we wouldn't have heard about it. Because he's not famous. He's just like that guy. That's his legacy. He got shot. All right. So Ken was convicted of assault, but was freed on bail pending appeal. And the bail was $40,000. So he came up with 10% of $40,000, which is still $4,000. In 1980, that's like a decent amount of money.
It's a big chunk of change.
Yeah. It's thought that he like stole a lot. And he was like an antique dealer, was part of his like real job. But people were like, well, yeah, he stole antiques from other people.
And then sold it.
And then sold them. So right after he was released, like he left the jail, he went to the D&G tavern with a rifle with a bayonet attached to it.
Oh my God.
And made a bunch of threats against Bo. Bo wasn't in the tavern, but he walked in and he was like, I'm gonna get Bo, I'm gonna kill him, I'm gonna punch him in the face, I'm gonna get him. I feel like what he said was not as nice as what I just said.
I feel like what he said was not
what
how
he
a
said
child
was like, ooh, girl, I'm gonna get him.
Oh, you wait and see.
Let me take my earrings out. All right. After this, the townspeople met with the sheriff to see how they could protect themselves. And the sheriff's answer was, you guys should super tote start a neighborhood watch.
Or let's just put this fucking monster away.
Amen.
How about prison for this guy, right? So Ken's hearing about the... So he was just waiting for his appeal. For some reason, I do not know how he got released. Like, this is ridiculous. This was literally the 21st time he had been indicted. And it was the first time that he saw the inside of a prison cell for more than like 3 days.
How on the sweet earth?
And all he had to do was like post 10% of bail.
Yeah. Right. Basically, it happened because he would just intimidate everybody by parking out. And it's just like, if you're in jail, you can't park outside of people's car. Put him in jail and he can't park outside of anybody's house.
Can't do the park stop.
You can't drive when you're in jail. There's no cars. So Ken's hearing kept on getting delayed. And finally, on the morning of July 10th, 1981, the townspeople met with the sheriff at the Legion Hall to discuss how to protect themselves. During the meeting, the townsfolk heard that Ken and his former child bride, Trina, who was now 24, were at the DNG where he had been threatening Bo earlier. Because that was the day that he had gone back to trial. And I don't know what happened with the trial. It's murky. It's old. It was so long ago. Like, people were still thought disco was good. And they were like, all right, we're going to go and we're going to get him. And the sheriff was like, you guys, do not do that. Just form a neighborhood watch. I've already talked to you about it. Just do that. And the sheriff then left and drove out of town. Because I kind of think it was kind of like when you see like your niece or nephew like doing a thing and they've been annoying you all day and then they turn on the TV and you're like, no screen time. Oh, well, maybe you can watch a little screen time so that I don't have to talk to you anymore. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, he was like, totally form a neighborhood watch. I have to go. Okay, bye.
I'm out of here.
So
I have worked for 18 hours straight. I haven't eaten in 7 of them.
I'm done.
I don't write the laws. I just enforce them. I'm out of here. Have you seen Stranger Things? My life is very tough. So there were like 60 townspeople at this meeting and they all went to this bar and just like completely filled up this bar. And Ken finished his drink, bought a 6-pack to go because this was in 1980, this magical time where you could buy a 6-pack at the bar.
At the bar and take it.
Yeah,
home.
Which beautiful. You can't do it anymore. And maybe it was because it was Missouri. Either way, beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, what a lucky man. And then he and his former child bride, Tina, went out to his truck. While he was in his truck, Trina saw someone raise a rifle and she screamed at Ken, oh my God, there's a rifle. And she says that he saw the rifle. He wasn't afraid at all. He like had this look on his face like he accepted what was going to happen. He was shot at several times and was hit twice by 2 different guns. No one called an ambulance and he died. There were 46 witnesses to the shooting. No one could say who did it.
Or no one would no one say
exactly
who did it.
Except for his child bride, Trina. The DA decided not to press charges, which really pissed off Trina, who sued the sheriff, the mayor, and Del Clement, the supposed Batman slash shooter, for $6 million.
Wow.
They settled for $17,600 with no guilt assigned to anyone. And basically the judge was like, this is going to be very expensive. There's no reason to have this. Everybody hates Ken. We're fine with him being dead. No one's going to jail about it.
Good riddance.
But Trina, here is $17,000 because probably what happened to you was very traumatic. And that's fair. I would be upset too. Yeah. Somebody got shot right next to me. I'd be like, you could have hit me.
Yeah.
All right, so why Del Clement? Well, Del was part owner of D&G Tavern, which was Ken's favorite bar. I think it was the only bar. This place had like 400 people.
I was gonna say, probably like 2 bars.
There was like a bar.
Yeah.
But so whenever Ken was in town, nobody would go to his bar because Ken would go into his bar all the time. He didn't really mess with anything.
Hated Ken.
Yeah, exactly. Like people just didn't
want to messing with his business.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And the thing is, like, Ken would just like sit quietly to himself. He didn't fuck with shit, but like him just being there lost him money. He also supposedly I never saw this in any like journals. It was like some person being like, well, I heard he did this. Apparently he parked outside of Del Clemens' house a lot. For some reason, he like tried to steal his cattle or something. Everyone apparently is a rancher in this town and also does other things.
Also does other things. Was Ken ever like a peeping Tom, or he just parked outside as like an intimidation tactic?
The only reports that I found were not him peeping. They were him intimidating.
Intimidating.
And he was a really big guy too. Like, I don't know how tall he was, but he was 270 pounds. Which can kind of go either way. If he's very tall, that's very scary. And if he's not, that's not that scary. I'm not afraid of a super fat guy unless he sits on me, I guess.
He could crush
or if
you.
He parks outside your he house. He could crush all the time.
Me. And what if he's also an alien? Mm-hmm. Then he and leaves me on the top of a mountain.
Leaves you in the snow in negative 30 degree
what
weather.
What if Ken was. What if he crushed those people?
He was born before it happened. It was Ken.
It was Ken.
Yeah,
it was definitely Ken.
He would have been like 25 years old.
Yeah, that's an age you can do some shit.
Yeah, you can do things when you're 25. I didn't, but some people do.
Also, side note, while we're talking about age, I didn't include this. Igor Dyatlov, who led the expedition and who the pass is named after, was 23 when he led the expedition. What the fuck have I done with my life?
Yeah. Fuck him.
I know.
Fuck him. Oh, do you ever think about, oh, I hate people like that, like Steve Prefontaine, who died when he was like 24 and he broke every record ever in running. And he was like the inspiration for Nike shoes. And I'm like, fuck you, man.
You make us all look
so
like
hard.
Shit.
Know. You know what? I'm a very good bartender at the breakfast restaurant where I work, Steve Prefontaine, who died when he was 24 and still had two movies made about him in like the same year. Like, he was so good that they were like, we're not pulling either of these movies. He has to have two movies made about him in the same year.
In the same mother trucking year.
Yes.
Can Amy come on the podcast every week?
Yeah.
Yes. I'll just fly out every Wednesday.
And I'll usually take a record bus on here. Tuesdays. So try to be here on Tuesday.
Tuesdays actually work better for
okay.
me.
I thought they might.
So Del had a real stake in Ken being murdered, but everybody, their response when they're like, who did it, they were like, well, I don't even know, I just couldn't say, and you know, it was so confusing and just
so much
I
chaos.
Was very busy. Apparently the weirdest thing is that like this entire crowd of people, when Ken left the bar, they all silently followed him out to his truck.
Eerie.
Which is so creepy. And I don't feel bad for Ken because he's obviously like the worst.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick.
But
it's creepy to think of this quiet crowd going out after
him. This was obviously like,
oh yeah, absolutely. Like the sheriff left and they were like, we're going to kill this guy, which I'm 100% down with because of the lockup. 21 times he was indicted and he only got busted the 21st time and then he still was out of prison.
Right.
What the fuck? All right.
Sorry, he deserved this.
He absolutely deserved to be killed.
So, that also makes me question, like, who was this guy? That he was able to manipulate the system.
How did he talk his way out?
I think that he was probably, like...
Did he have any connections with the police force in that they would, like, you know,
want to
let him go?
He probably threatened judges.
Threatened judges, yes.
You know,
or if
and
he
the
was,
jury.
Was he, like, a drug dealer? The U.S. government in all factions have always had very interesting relationships with drug dealers.
I mean, there was no information about him being a drug dealer, which of course doesn't mean that he was not, but it probably wouldn't be very difficult
to find out.
Yeah.
You know, he had like 12 wives at a time all living together. Like one of them would have found his cocaine.
Very
Someone would have found
his Okay, stash. That's true.
But his ex-wives maintained that he was a good guy. So Del Clement maintained until his death, he was like, I had nothing to do with this. I was just standing there. I was just living my life. And when he died in 2009, there were all of these articles posted that he had not made a deathbed confessional. because all these people were like, oh, he's going to confess. We'll find out when he dies. And then he just was like, I just died. I just regular died. I didn't have a confession about it. And so Alice and his child bride, Trina, maintained that he was a good guy. And they both would be like, you know, he was a really wild guy. And, you know, he couldn't tame him, but he was a sweetheart. And all these things that they accuse him of, that's just not true. And the law, they just didn't like him because, oh God, what did Alice said that the law didn't like him because he would not bow down to them. Like, he wouldn't bow down to officers of the law.
Like, he had no respect for them.
Yeah, basically.
So they arrested him a bunch of times.
And then let him go, and he never served any meaningful time.
Cool, bro.
Yeah, but so in 1981, he was shot and killed, and to this day, no one has ever been like, oh, yeah, it was so-and-so. Like, right.
Isn't that interesting? Like, they didn't test the ballistics of bullets or anything. Literally, everyone was just like,
let's accept
bummer.
This.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Ken?
Too bad.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Well, and I was reading that pretty recently the former DA was replaced with a new DA, or maybe it was a sheriff. Either way, you know, they have some unsolved crimes in this town. It's kind of a shithole town. It has a lot of crime happening. Less crime, I'm sure, now that Ken is dead. But, you know, he was talking about how he was going to hand over some unsolved crimes to the next, I think it was the district attorney. And the journalist was like, oh, you're gonna hand over this crime? And he was like, no, like, to us it's a closed case. Like, we don't care.
No
like,
one
we
gives don't a care shit.
We Nobody are done gives with a this shit. We don't care about this guy.
Can you imagine though, like 46 people able to keep a secret? I cannot. Like, my sister, just the other day, we were at my cousin's wedding, and she told a couple of my cousins like a bunch of family secrets, and I was like, Lori, they weren't supposed to know that. And she was like, oh shit, well, but she had had two beers,
and then
she told my cousins all these secrets. This isn't a big deal that they know it, but I was like, Lori, god damn it,
you have no control.
After two beers, she told them some secrets that like didn't matter. Can you imagine if you knew who killed somebody?
Yeah, how does that not just burst
you
out
have
of
like
you?
Three whiskeys. If somebody kills somebody in front of me, like, the next time that I, like, hit a weed, I'd be like, it's crazy that Ashley drowned Lauren in a 6-foot-deep pool.
Right in front of everybody, but there was 40 people in the pool, and no one noticed.
I'd like to think you're loved well enough so that if you died in front of 46 people, at least one of them would have been like, listen.
I don't know.
I don't know if I am. People
think
like
Ashley Cassidy did it.
It was Ashley.
Yeah, but I'm also universally loved by all, and no one would rat me out.
I think Gabby and Penny would rat you out.
That's true.
They probably would.
Because they don't care, because they're cats
will
and
turn
cats
their back
don't
on you.
Care. Cats only... Do you know what cats do? All they do is turn their stupid dumb backs on you. I don't like cats, in case
I don't
that
like
was
cats
a secret.
Or Ken.
I don't like cats, and I don't like Ken.
I hate cats, and
so
I
that
hate
was
Ken.
That's another poem that I'm working
Missouri
on.
Missouri in 1970.
Yeah, in the 1970s to 1981. Probably everybody was wearing cowboy boots. Were you envisioning everyone in cowboy boots?
I was, actually, and I imagined Ken in a cowboy hat.
Most of the people that were there that night have died. Or are very old.
Yeah, I would say
and the
closer
only
to very
way,
old.
Yeah, the only way this is ever going to get solved is if there is a deathbed confession.
Yeah.
If there is someone that comes forward and is
right.
I was there, so-and-so did it, or I was there, I was the one that shot him.
Yeah.
Because obviously the cops do not give a shit.
No, they're not looking into this.
No, and he's dead, and his child bride has probably moved on.
She's
to someone.
Dead. She died in 2012.
Oh.
Yeah, so she was in her 50s, so she lived like a decently lengthy life. So she left, she married somebody new, she moved out.
Forgot all about Ken.
hopefully she forgot all about Ken, but she still maintained his innocence for like 20 years.
That's the crazy thing.
That's kind of the interesting thing to me, is that even in like abusive relationships, or not necessarily physically abusive, but even just like manipulative relationships, once you're separated from that for long enough and your brain stops being so clouded by that person, then you can look back and say, oh, yeah, okay, he was horrible.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, it did get to the point where people would be like, hey, can we talk to you about this? And she was like, no, leave me alone. Don't talk to me. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
That's true. It could just be like, yeah. I also don't care.
Yeah, she was like, he's dead. I'm alive. My kid's alive. I'm married. I'm living somewhere else. I'm living the dream. I'm not dating a guy who burned down my parents' house anymore. Just leave me alone. Yeah. Don't talk to me. And then when they were like, do you still believe? She was like, whatever. Yeah, fine. Get off my property.
Yeah.
I don't know why, like, she sounds like a 1940s.
Get off my property.
I'm Lauren Bacall. And I'm here to tell you that I am a busty broad.
Oh, my.
The end.
Yes, that was the end of Ken McElroy, the bully of Skidmore, Missouri.
Hey, weirdos. So I don't usually do this, but I was so fascinated by the Ken McElroy story that I did more research after we recorded the episode. And since we're weeks ahead in terms of recording, I wouldn't have a chance to bring it up on the show for like 5 episodes. So I wanted to add a little bit of what I was able to find here for you guys to listen to today. So the first thing, Ken's grandniece reached out on Reddit about a year ago. She was commenting on a post about a podcast interview with Harry McLean, who was the author of a book called In Broad Daylight, which is all about McElroy and his crimes and also the investigation into his murder. I saw several comments, by the way, while doing this research, saying that that book was their favorite true crime book of all time. I haven't read it, so I can't speak for it. However, I did see that comment pop up a lot. So if you like true crime books, I would say to check it out. It's called In Broad Daylight. Anyway, she just had a few interesting things to say that I thought I'd share with you. She never met the guy. Her mother barely met the guy when she was little. But she did say her grandmother, who was Ken's sister, never believed Ken did any of the worst stuff he's been accused of, much like Ken's ex-wives. The rest of the family is well aware of how awful he was, but in her mind, he was just a good Christian man who the town just had it out for who knows why. Maybe, I mean, I guess it's just the love of a brother and not wanting to believe he was a bad person, but like, he was a bad person. Also, something I found really interesting, apparently when Ken was alive, the town treated anyone related to Ken really poorly. They used to drive by and dump garbage on his sister's lawn. I suppose it was a way of getting at Ken, but still keeping a safe distance from Ken, because Ken seemed like a really dangerous guy, what with all the shooting people in the head and whatnot. This happened to Ken's parents and other siblings as well. So it seems like maybe he wasn't the only bully in Skidmore. Not that he didn't deserve it. I also read that one of the assistant DAs that charged McElroy with assault said that the reason that they had to drop the charges was that the witness never showed up in court. Also makes sense, what with Ken's affinity for stalking people, sitting outside their homes, threatening people. Again, shooting people in the face. He also went to Skidmore after Ken was murdered, and no one would talk to him, including people who weren't even there the night of the murder. So basically, everyone wanted Ken dead for good reason, and no one wants anyone charged for his murder. Now, this is where it gets interesting. I felt like the most mysterious and fascinating part of the entire story wasn't exactly Ken or his murder, but the town of Skidmore, Missouri. So I think Amy had said that the population of Skidmore in the 80s was like 400 or close to 400 people. Well, the population now is closer to about 265. It's a very small town. But despite its small population, The town has a very long history of violence and an unusually high crime rate per capita, specifically when it comes to murder. So we already know about Olkin in 1981, but 2 decades later, a brutal crime took place. On October 16th, 2000, Greg Dragoo beat and dragged his girlfriend Wendy Gillenwater down several country roads outside of Skidmore, resulting in her death. He drug her behind his truck. Her body was found outside her Skidmore home. He was charged with murder and given a life sentence. Less than a year later, on April 11th, 2001, Branson Perry, age 20, went missing. And he went missing in a very weird way. He had a friend over, a female friend over, and she was helping him clean up his house in preparation for the return of his father, who had been in the hospital. I guess his parents had gotten a divorce a year or two before that, so his mom didn't live with them. His father is in the hospital. I don't know what for. And it was like in 3 days he was coming home. So this friend came over to like help him clean up. And at the same time, there were 2 men working on a car out front. They were working on the alternator because it blew the day before. The last time Branson was seen, he was walking to the shed or into the shed, like next to the house. And that's the last time he was ever seen or heard from ever again. No trace of him has ever been found. None of his stuff was missing. His body was never found. No one confessed to anything. And there's quite a few weird things involved in this crime, or this disappearance, rather. I guess you don't know it's a crime, but it was a crime. So one of the weird things was the testimony of the friend that was there. She was saying that at one point she walked in the kitchen and saw Branson run inside, grab something out of a cabinet, and run back outside. And then when he came back in, he acted like nothing was up. Then later, a couple hours later, one of the guys that was working on the car out front was in the kitchen. She walked in, he was in the kitchen, and he was looking through the cabinets. And she asked him, "What are you looking for?" And he said nothing and went back outside. Now, this was before he was missing, so she didn't think anything of it. Also, of all the people that were interviewed, everyone had taken a lie detector test, and some passed and some didn't. Okay. None of his stuff, like I said, none of his stuff was missing, except the only thing that was missing from the house was a set of jumper cables. And 2 weeks after the investigation began, the jumper cables reappeared in the shed. Who knows? The only break in the case, really, and it wasn't even a break, unfortunately, it led to nothing, but in 2004, Jack Wayne Rogers was sentenced to 30 years in prison for a string of child pornography charges and for cutting off men's genitals. And reportedly, a year before his arrest, in an internet chat room, he bragged about raping and murdering a young man whose physical description, age, and location matched Branson Perry. But he claimed that it was just a fantasy, and without evidence, he was not charged. Then, so sorry, this one is the absolute worst. In 2004, Bobby Jo Stinnett, 8 months pregnant at the time, was murdered in her home. The killer was 35-year-old Lisa M. Montgomery, who strangled Stinnett to death and cut her unborn child from her womb and took off with her. Believe it or not, the baby survived and still survives to this day. And Lisa Montgomery, this is a little bit easier to believe, was arrested and she was sentenced to death. She is still on death row today. This is an interesting coincidence. Interesting coincidence alert. Beep, boop, bop. Bobby Jo Stinnett was a relative of Branson Perry. And they were both born in 1981, the same year Ken McElroy was murdered. That probably doesn't have anything to do with anything, but I just thought it was really interesting. So what the fuck is going on in this town? A lot of people say meth or drugs, but it seems like a hell of a lot more than just a drug problem.
Honestly, when I think of this town, I think of Derry from Stephen King's It, where like everyone is kind of under the town's spell, and also something crazy comes out every 20 years and just terrorizes the town. If you are still interested in learning more about this case, I would say definitely check out that book. I know I'm going to, In Broad Daylight. And then also, if you want to hear some like personal stories about Skidmore, Missouri, I Googled, everyone knows Reddit's my favorite. I Googled Skidmore, Missouri Reddit, and a ton of posts came up. Most of them are, yes, about Ken McElroy and this situation because it's so bizarre. But there's a ton, even in those threads, if you scroll through those threads, there's a ton of conversations between people who have had experiences in Skidmore, like who are from Missouri and got lost one night in Skidmore. And they just talk about how something feels wrong in the town. Like they didn't even know what town they were in. And they were like, this place is fucking weird. I don't like it. It's super interesting stuff. I think you should check it out. I'm going to let you get back to the show. Have a good day. I have been sitting on this story since we started the show way back in 2016. 17.
2017, yes. So long ago.
So
barely remember it.
I was saving this story actually specifically for our next paranormal investigation, but I don't know when that's going to happen because we have been dying to stay at the Cecil Hotel in downtown Queen. Los Angeles, which is now the Stay on Main, but they have not opened yet. And if they have, I don't know how to make a reservation because I have called the number on the website. It literally doesn't work. I have gone to like hotels.com, clicked on Stay on Main, tried to book a room, and it's like gone to like some random website and it's been like, this, there's no rooms available for any of the dates you've chosen. And I've chosen like dates 3 years in the future.
Maybe it's the universe not letting you stay there
posted pictures of inside the Stay on Main and been like, look at it now. And like, I'm like, but I can't book a room.
Ben is haunting you, and he is like,
Ben is like,
you're cheating
me from going
on me with other guys. And he's like, you can't click on this hyperlink, you jerk, you're cheating.
I should see if I can reserve us a room, and if it works for me,
then that just means that Ben, you just told Ben.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to find another person.
Gosh darn it.
So we are waiting there. It's the Stay on Main now, and you may know the Cecil Hotel, maybe not you because you don't watch the show, but you listeners may know the Cecil Hotel is the inspiration for season 5 of American Horror Story Hotel with Lady Gaga, who is amazing
in the show.
Okay.
I think Lady Gaga's amazing, even though I don't watch that show.
She's amazing.
She's amazing in
every
so many other ways.
Way possible. But boy, oh boy, in American Horror Story, she plays a vampire, first of all.
It's perfect.
And she's a vampire that like lives on the top floor of this hotel, this creepy, haunted, crazy hotel. And she basically like runs the hotel, and she's amazing. This is one of the most mysterious events I've ever read about in my entire life. One day, in 2013, after about 3 weeks of complaints from hotel guests about water pressure, discolored and foul-tasting water, an inspection of the rooftop water tank led to the discovery of a 21-year-old student from Canada named Elisa Lamb, who had been missing for about 24 days. And yes, that does mean that the hotel guests were bathing in and drinking dead body water from the top of this hotel.
That's my least favorite part of this story. It makes me want to scream.
The initial investigation led to some really hard to answer questions. Like, for example, how did she get onto the roof without the alarms going off? If she did get up there herself without setting off multiple alarms, the multiple alarms it took to get to the roof, how did she lift the heavy lid of the water tank? How did she close it behind her and seal herself in? The coroner's report said that there were no major injuries on her body, and aside from her prescription medications, there were no signs of hard drug use. She was bipolar, so it can absolutely be ruled a suicide if you ignore how she got up there undetected and into the water tank. But that doesn't explain all the other weird shit surrounding her death, which I will go into now. The biggest and by far the strangest piece of evidence has to be the 4 minute long videotape of her in the elevator the night that she disappeared. Have you seen this?
I have.
Holy cannoli.
Makes me have shivers.
First of all, I'll explain it. We'll post the video, but I'll explain like what happens. She gets into the elevator. This footage is from the elevator, like the hotel's actual like security footage of the elevator. So she gets inside and she immediately presses 4 floors of buttons. Then she sneaks to the door and jumps out quickly and looks both directions and then gets back in and hides in the corner while looking at the door. So she's very obviously hiding and or running from someone that she can see. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that person's actually there, I don't know. One of the scary parts of this is that the elevator doors don't close ever. They won't close. Even when she's pushing the elevator door close buttons, the elevator doors are not cooperating with anything that she's doing at all. The doors stay open. Then she goes out into the hall and she starts holding her head like she's crying or pulling at her hair. She gets back in, pushes more buttons on the elevator. Nothing happens. Then she goes out and she starts doing this weird stuff with her hands, like she's talking to someone or trying to feel around for someone that isn't visible on the screen that we're watching. Then it looks like she's pleading to someone, asking like, please or don't, or like, why are you doing this? It looks like she's like pleading for someone to like stop doing whatever they're doing. Eventually, she walks away from the elevator, and that's the last time she was ever seen until her body was found. And they didn't notice this tape until after the body was found, then they went back and, like, found the tape. The other strange things around her death are connected to the theories about how she died. You know, if it wasn't a very strangely successful, against all odds, suicide, what are the other theories surrounding it? So one theory is that she was murdered by a hotel employee. Several serial killers have stayed at the Cecil, so it definitely attracts dark personalities, if you believe in the whole, like, energy attracting like energy theories.
Definitely.
Someone who had keys to the roof and knew that she was traveling alone and had access to her room. Maybe someone who had the alarm code and could, like, disengage the alarm. Someone who knew where to stand in order to stay off the camera and had access to all the footage, even.
Oh, yeah.
If Lam was being chased by a person, if she was being chased, pushing a bunch of buttons in the elevator would make sense. So apparently people are encouraged to do that in a situation to throw off their attacker if you're being, like, chased in a hotel. I read that on, like, several different websites. But then I read on some websites that at least in the last, like, 15 years... Mm-hmm. Elevators have come up with a deterrent so that if little kids get into an elevator and push like 30 buttons, the elevator actually won't go anywhere.
Oh, it's like this shouldn't have happened.
But also in the last 15 years, they've designed it so that if that did happen, if a kid pushed like 20 buttons, all you'd have to do is push them again and it would like take them off.
Yeah,
that's good.
So I don't know. So did it possibly, like, the elevator didn't move at all. Did an employee disable the elevator so that it couldn't go to a different floor?
Creepy.
So that's a possibility. So one of the crazier conspiracy theories is that she was murdered over a government project. So Elisa Lam had a blog. And in that blog, she had recently written about a Pentagon-funded invisibility cloaking project.
Whoa.
Harry Potter!
Yes. So the project had been in the works for the United States and South Korea for some time. And many have speculated that the government or even a private company may have ordered her assassination for interfering or possibly oversharing. Now, this sounds super crazy and like, why would they do that? That would be like assassinating me for even talking about this right now. But if you think back at her, so she wrote that blog post before she was found. And if you think back at her behavior, she's literally interacting with something that you cannot see.
Right. Were they wearing an invisibility cloak?
Possibly. So this is even crazier. So someone noticed very soon after the conspiracy started that if you look at the Google Maps view of the Cecil Hotel and zoom in on the hotel, you can see that there's a company registered inside the building. And it's called the Invisible Light Agency.
Shut up.
That's what it's called. Supposedly, according to their website, which, by the way, is no longer active anymore. It was taken down soon after this was discovered.
Of course it was. Uh-huh.
They specialized in light effects and, quote, other realities special effects. A man named Anthony V was mentioned in an article relating to the company in 2011. This man, at the time, was working as a supervisor at Raytheon Missile Systems, a company that develops weapons. Of course, this information was taken off of LinkedIn, where it was found at the time, and his profile was also taken down soon after.
That is fucking interesting. Weird. Very, very suspicious.
Very.
It's weird.
What if they're invisible? Oh, God damn it.
Yeah,
what if there's one more way for men to attack us?
Oh, my gosh. God, I can't even think damn about it. That.
Yeah, because you know a woman wasn't wearing that invisibility cloak.
You know she wasn't.
What was the... Oh, it was Amy Schumer. Inside Amy Schumer. Do you remember the episode where they did the sketch where she played an undercover cop? And she was like, I can go in any room and not be noticed.
Yes.
Because she wasn't a hot girl.
Yeah.
And like, there'd literally be a room and she would be like eating a bag of potato chips and it would just be like a bag of potato chips floating in the air.
And people would be like, we're committing a crime
What's
right
happening?
Now.
But
and
like,
she'd
they
be like,
see her because she wasn't
I
hot.
Got you. But then like, she would be like arresting people and they still would be like, what's happening?
What's happening?
Who's
Why
touching
am I,
me?
What's happening right now?
What is that?
So good.
So now this one, this is actually just probably a strange fucking coincidence, I'm sure. But during the time, this is so weird. Okay, during the time when Elisa Lam was staying at the Cecil, there was a tuberculosis outbreak on Skid Row, which is where the Cecil is located, and most of the downtown area surrounding the hotel. The strange part about this is that the TB test being used in the area was the enzyme-linked immunoabsorbent assay, or Lam Elisa for short.
What?
Lam Elisa, spelled the exact same way as Elisa Lam. The antibiotic used for TB patients and its side effects include confusion and abnormal behavior. So people speculated she may have been a tuberculosis patient. Her toxicology screening didn't find anything strange in her system, drugs-wise, or tuberculosis in her lungs. However, there were a ton of delays in the report's release, so not everyone is convinced that the report is actually accurate, and it hasn't been doctored. There are people that also think that Elisa Lam never even existed. That this case was fabricated to distract from an intentional government-sponsored tuberculosis outbreak and testing, and having this crazy bonkers story of this girl being found in this water tower and this crazy like hotel video footage with the exact same name. Now, if you Google Elisa Lam, or Lam Elisa, for that matter, what comes up is about 15 pages of this bonkers story about this girl drowning in this hotel. And like, maybe it's ghosts, maybe it's this, maybe it's invisibility cloaks. And it's about 15 pages until you get to the tuberculosis immunization Lam Elisa.
And
so now it's like buried.
That would make sense because the hotel, after Elisa Lam was found, they were like, we're not closing. We're not giving discounts. If you come here, you're showering in dead person water. They like, I think that they gave money back to people who had showered there. But then afterwards they were like, this is it.
This you're, is our thing now.
This yep. is, you're this is in dead for. Body water. And people will be like, what about, and they'd be like, we're not giving you a discount. You knew it when you came here. If you don't want to come here, you don't have to come here. You can cancel. But don't, you're oh bathing gosh. In dead body water.
Yeah, that's our thing.
Yeah,
that's
which you would think do. If there was really a dead body, they would be like, how about we close though? on account of you can get very ill from a dead body.
Sued.
Yeah, and very
super sued.
Well, and because people, that was the thing, is like part of the reason that they found her was that people had like black water and like the water was all gross coming out.
Yeah, and they had literal weeks of people complaining about the water before they were like, maybe we should check the water tower.
Now, why did it take them that long? Yeah. I feel like you should check that immediately if at least like three people complained.
But also, they probably never had to go
in it. It was also kind of a shitty hotel. Sorry, Cecil.
They probably did.
That area's nice now, but it wasn't always.
But this was in 2013. Mm-hmm. This wasn't like back in 1989.
No, I know. But even so, like downtown is in the past couple, just couple of years has now gotten a lot better. But it's still, I mean, still has its rundown.
Still garbage.
Areas.
I don't know things about downtown LA. I was just in it today for the first time ever. And there
and
was
you were
a.
Not-
There
Happy.
Was a gas
not
station,
impressed.
And they would not let me go to the bathroom because they
classic.
Said that they didn't have one. Okay.
Okay. So one of the strangest things about this already strange death is the connection it has to the movie Dark Water, which was released in 2005. So the movie takes place in an old haunted building where guests are complaining of foul-tasting dark water coming from their taps, and the cause is a girl decomposing in the water tank on the roof. If that's not creepy enough, both the young girl found in the film and Elisa Lam are wearing red coats.
Oh.
The main characters in the movie are a mother named Dahlia and her daughter Cecilia.
Oh my god.
Cecil Hotel and the Black Dahlia. And the Cecil was one of the last places that the Black Dahlia was seen.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from Biltmore, which we have already investigated. There are also scenes in the movie where the elevator malfunctions. It will not go to a floor up or a floor down. She pushes the buttons and it does. The doors don't close, or the doors do close and they open back up. She's on the same floor. There's a bunch
Weird.
Of elevator malfunctions. Also, young Cecilia can be seen talking to thin air because her imaginary friend is there, and Dahlia can be seen moving her hand in a weird way because she feels like someone is trying to hold it, just like she's doing in the elevator at the Cecil. I should also mention this movie was based on a Japanese horror movie about the death of an Asian girl who drowned in a water cistern on top of an apartment building, which is exactly what fucking happened.
That's
at the
really
Cecil
crazy.
Hotel. So
the Japanese movie was about the Cecil Hotel.
No.
Oh, okay.
The
okay,
Japanese
okay.
movie just happened to feature an Asian girl, and Elisa Lam was an Asian girl. No, I'm just saying,
well,
like,
I mean,
all
this is a Japanese movie. Yeah. The people in it are probably
no, but
Japanese.
Like the
it's still crazy.
The
though.
Movie it, yeah. Dark Water is more so what. Has similarities. It still came out in 2005 and this happened in 2013.
Right.
So it still has more similarities. But it was based on a Japanese movie and Elisa Lam was Japanese. So the connections are insane. Was it someone trying to recreate a murder from the movie Dark Water? Dark Water with Jennifer Connelly? You know, that classic horror film that everyone knows. No one knows that movie. Exactly.
That movie.
Like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to try and recreate The Shining, which would make sense. I'm also trying to recreate The Shining in my everyday life.
Yeah.
Anyways.
My.
I do have the final photo from The Shining right over there, so.
Oh, why'd you? I have to sleep on your couch tonight.
You do.
That's knowing
haunt
that
me
picture
all evening.
Is above you.
Sorry. Okay, no one ever figured out what happened to her. She did have the only drugs in her system were the drugs that she had prescribed to her for her bipolar disorder. And like I said, she was bipolar, but everyone in her family, everyone that's close to her was saying like there were no signs that she was in like, you know, bipolar people have manic episodes, depressive episodes.
Right.
But everyone was saying she was doing so much better on medication. And the thing is, you can absolutely relapse. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This could all be coincidences about a very sad girl who killed herself. But it's a lot of fucking coincidences for this story.
Yeah.
Like, in the fact that, like, there's no possible way that she could have gotten up there undetected.
I mean, that's the craziest thing. Gotten herself up into that water tank.
Also, when they found her, she was in her underwear, but her clothes were in the tank.
Yeah.
So she undressed herself. Why would you do that if you were trying to kill yourself?
And the thing is there was no sign of sexual trauma, but it had also been, you know, she'd also been in water for weeks. So I don't know how.
You'd be pretty badly decomposed.
I mean, they, right? I mean.
There are ways. It was 2013.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't like 1961 where they're like everything's puffy. We don't know.
Yeah. The reports for her body, like the actual, you know, coroner's report, was delayed and delayed and delayed, and it took a very long time for this to, like, the reports to actually come out, because obviously all of Los Angeles and like half of the United States, I remember when this happened.
Me too.
And people were like, we want answers, please.
Yeah, what the hell?
I do not remember this at all.
Well, I lived in LA at the time.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm sure if I lived somewhere and somebody got murdered like that,
What made you pay attention was the fact that it was like a body was found in the water tower of the Cecil Hotel. And I already knew about the Cecil Hotel because Richard Ramirez was staying at the Cecil Hotel when he was known for some weird shit. The Black Dahlia was one of the last places she was seen. So I knew about the Cecil Hotel. So it was like a body was found in the water tower of the Cecil Hotel. And what hooked you was like, the reason it was found was because people were tasting and bathing in smelly, bad tasting water. And just that's horrible. What it was like. What the
and
fuck?
The video was released video almost immediately released online, that footage. Quickly, and then I just watched it just over and over. And that just took the internet by storm.
Yeah, that was insane.
Well, I do think us living in LA is what helped us hear about it for sure, probably. Though, first.
Well, and didn't a lot of people, there's like this way to like get to another realm on an elevator. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, that's what she was doing.
Yeah, there's like some game. I read about this. It was like some game that you could play where you like go to different levels on an elevator and you might go into a different dimension or something. And that's what they thought happened to her. And it was like, oh, okay.
Or well, they just thought she was trying to do it.
Or she was trying to do it.
Yeah, because you in the other dimension, the video cameras aren't going to work, Ashley.
They might. You don't know anything about other interdimensional video cameras.
When you leave the dimension, the video cameras don't work anymore, obviously.
So we don't know what happened to Elisa Lam, but I don't know. That's just like one of the craziest. I want to stay at the Cecil or the Stay on Main so bad. But like I said, phone number doesn't work.
I'll have to try that out.
We should just go there tomorrow.
Let's just stop by.
Swing through.
Just kidding. I don't want to go to downtown LA again.
Just kidding. I never want to go downtown ever again. Amy had a really fun trip here.
Yeah, it takes 6 hours to take the bus from San Diego, even though it tells you on the schedule that it'll take 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Yeah, right.
That's insanity.
Does it take 2 hours and 50 minutes to do anything in this town? Okay, that's all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you, Amy, for coming on the show.
Thank you, ladies, for having me.
You're so much fun.
You guys are so, Lauren, it was a pleasure to meet you, my long lost soul sister. We're both wearing big glasses. It's so good.
The cutest.
I wore my glasses in honor of you. We'll have to post a photo of me in my Lauren glasses. I wore my big round 80s glasses in honor of you.
Stylin'.
Listeners, never introduce your best friends to each other.
We don't like you anymore, actually.
They team up on you. They become friends. They forget you ever existed.
You're picked out of the crow.
Whatever.
Just kidding. Never. We're
You'll
so obsessed
You'll still have
with
Gabby
you.
To fart on you.
What a delight.
Anyways, thank you so much for coming on. I know this has been a long time coming, but you live in Denver, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. I live very far away. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I'm so glad that I finally got a chance to be here, even if we spent way too much time talking about Happy Feet. And wasting time talking about fake documentaries.
That's very true. And thank you, listeners, for listening. As per usual, please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Keep It Weird Cast and our Facebook page, Keep It Weird. Make sure you follow Amy Hanselman on Instagram. Her handle is at Hanselpants. That's HANSELP. P-A-N-T-Z. Gets a little crazy at the end. Hansel Pants. We've tagged her in a couple photos. You should be able to find them. Check out our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast, to find out ways you can donate to the show and get some goodies like a newsletter or some mini-sodes with Handsome Joe where he tells you what he thinks about each episode. And I wish I could tell you what episode to look out for next week, but darn it, I can't, because we're recording 3 episodes in the span of a week and I have no idea what order they're being released, but I believe coming up, we have Urban Legends, Reincarnation, and of course this fall we've got Conspiracy Theories Part 2. So get your tin hats.
Yes, yes.
Your tinfoil hats need to get out and get ready and get on your head.
Is that with Handsome Joe?
Yes.
He's coming back.
I love Handsome Joe episodes.
Handsome Joe episodes are the chillest thing ever.
Oh, that was so perfectly John Ralphio. And I loved every second of it.
Amy, what's our sign off this week?
Oh, God. What? I forget. Am I...
Clearly, she doesn't listen to our entire episode.
No, I do. And I... Okay, in fairness... No, I
in
usually
fairness,
when you're
as
like,
soon as we start saying,
as soon as you
see,
no, that's when most people
I
shut
already
it
know
off.
About Instagram. I know. Follow you guys on Instagram. How do
Sorry
I sign you
it.
Off?
Whatever you want it to be.
All right.
It could be a jingle. It could be a poem. It could be one of your brilliant poems about Vince Vaughn.
All right. Yeah. If you listen to Vince Vaughn, then you'll never go wrong. Keep him in your heart. And Gabby will never fart on your face.
If you watch Vince Vaughn, you can't go wrong.
If you keep
if
him
you
in your heart.
If you grow a beard.
Oh.
And always
keep it weird.
Grow a beard.
Good, it's I loved fine. It. You know how I feel about beards.
Yeah,
I'm
and
pro.
Technically.
I'm pro beard. Poetry. Vince Vaughn. Forever. Did you guys see The Breakup? Real good movie. Okay, my poem's done.
That was well, beautiful.
One of
thank
our
you.
Best sign-ups.
That was like slam poetry.
It was about... It was slam poetry.
She's still going. She's still going.
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe... That poem is in my house. That's how you slam poetry.
That was really good.
You're welcome. Thank you for your Vince Vaughn poem.
Oh my God. Thank you for having my Vince Vaughn.
You're so welcome.